It's Mike.
And Dan.
This is our podcast, Comparing Apples to Oranges. Today's February 1st, 2018.
Coming to you from the future.
Yeah, this is live radio, yeah. So there's going
to
be
live to tape.
There might
We're
be
doing
some,
it live!
There might be some gaffes, some gaffer gaffes.
Mm-hmm.
But today we're discussing two things that are sort of in the same category that don't belong in the same genre, and we're going to use a set of criteria to decide which one is better. Dan, how you doing over there?
I'm doing fantastic.
That's not true. You were straight up very complaining.
Well,
earlier.
It's fucking
got your robe on.
It's fucking cold. When we're taping this, it is.
It's in the past.
What's the wind chill today?
I think negative. In the morning, it was negative 20.
That's insane.
Degrees Fahrenheit. Yeah.
And we're not in Greenland or anything like that.
It's icy in Greenland.
Yeah.
Remember?
Mm-hmm.
It's green in Iceland.
That's what Mighty Ducks taught us.
Oh, is that where we learned it?
That's where I learned it. That's where I learned all my geography from. From Emilio Estevez movies.
The Mighty Ducks man himself.
But I think it's so cold in here that I have my Batman bathrobe on. And I'm being accosted by a canine who wants my Twizzlers. But other than that, I'm great.
That's your autobiography.
Yeah. Accosted by a canine.
That wants my Twizzlers.
That wants my Twizzlers.
Okay, so today...
The Dan Rhino story.
We're going to discuss movies that have an anachronistic soundtrack.
I can make up words too, smartass.
Go on. Let's hear one.
Capability.
Okay. You can't just look at stuff and add, like... Substitute. Alright, this is getting outrageous. Anyway, so we've decided we're going to watch two movies whose soundtracks are not from their time. So we've watched two movies that were set in the medieval times, and they had, I don't know, 1700s, is that medieval times? I think that's the...
You ever been to a medieval times restaurant?
I've been to the racist one. What's that called? Dolly Parton's Civil War. You know what I'm
really?
Talking about?
Really?
What's that called?
I didn't...
Dixie Stampede.
Nice.
You never been there?
Nailed it. Uh-uh.
No. It's the same thing. They don't
I
serve...
don't venture into the South too often.
No, it ventures right into you if you're not careful. No, they get... it's none of the food can be eaten with a fork.
Mm.
Or a knife or a spoon. They just give you like a chicken and a bowl of soup and like all this stuff you're supposed to eat with your hands. And then the two sides, it's the north and the south that you cheer for.
Ah!
And at some point, I think somebody rides an ostrich. Does this sound familiar to you?
Not at all.
Okay.
This is a real place?
Yes. Dolly Parton like comes out and like, not all the time, but like introduces it.
Huh.
Yeah. So
I think I'd rather go to medieval times.
All right. Well, either
drink some mead.
You're not a mead drinker. Have you ever had mead?
I've had mead light.
It's not that great. Honey wine sounds like two things you would love, and it's not that great.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, we watched two movies set in the... One was in the 1300s, one was in the 1700s, and they both had soundtracks that were...
More modern.
They belonged to the time period of when the movie was made.
Mm-hmm.
One was in the 2000s and one was in the 80s. And we're going to discuss those
movies.
My wife
came up to
me. Yeah, my wife.
I'm taking my wife, please. How much?
Okay, so I was doing Borat. You were doing, I think, a really bad Rodney Dangerfield.
I went from Rodney Dangerfield and transitioned right into Borat, as most people do.
Okay.
Oh!
Hey!
And then a little Andrew Dice Clay there at the end. My wife came up with the idea for this category.
And is that your recommendation, that movie?
Yeah.
Okay, never mind then. So Jess, in a very like insightful way, that every time somebody tries to suggest something, I'm always like, well, no, you pick something you like, that's going to be your recommendation, then you figure out what category and genre it belongs to, and then you build off from there. And she did a great job. She's like, hey, I like this movie. It does this interesting thing.
Mm-hmm.
Find other movies that aren't in that you haven't seen, and go off of that. And that was great.
Yeah, and pretty smart.
We found a couple lists of these movies.
Mm-hmm.
Took a while to find it, but we found them.
Because we couldn't make up that word you made up.
Yeah.
Anachronistic.
Okay, it's not funny when you say it right.
I didn't think I did say it right.
Then it is funny. Yeah. All right, that's great.
Yep.
So yeah, we found two movies. Dan, how much does the soundtrack? How big of a role does it play when you watch a movie?
For me, I mean, it's
almost better than the movie for
yeah,
you.
Yeah,
right?
I hate to just sound like an idiot and just say it's pretty important.
Pretty good.
It's like when I hear those sports guys on TV. It's like, how big was this win for the team? It's pretty big. Like, that's why you make the big bucks, and that's why we make the big bucks on your podcast.
Yeah, only like really big bucks though.
Yeah,
like
I'm only in the six
only
figure,
in Bitcoin.
I'm only in the 6-figure range. I'm on a different form of online currency.
Okay,
what's that? It hasn't picked up yet.
Oh no.
It's like the poor man's Bitcoin, but we're hoping it'll catch on.
Botcoin.
I think, I mean, I was always a big soundtrack guy when I would buy CDs. You know, and we've talked about it on past shows, is that soundtracks, a lot of times, you know, you'll see a movie and the soundtrack will be something that kind of makes the movie memorable or kind of makes the memories of certain scenes or certain parts of that movie last longer,
right?
And then you might even go out and buy the soundtrack afterwards because you enjoyed the blending of the soundtrack and the movie together so well that you would want to own the soundtrack in isolation. So I think it really can, you know, make or break a movie. I mean, could you imagine, you know, certain movies without like the memorable scores to them, like Jaws,
Stanley Kubrick, and his Clockwork Orange.
Yeah,
you know,
or, I mean,
and that's set in the future. Yeah. I always appreciate when movies attempt to do like time appropriate music, but it's set in the future. Because like a complete terrible example would be I, Robot, the one with Will Smith, where they the whole point. Every time they mention something, he's like, oh, yeah, I'm more about that vintage stuff. And he puts on, like, a pair of Converse All-Stars. Mm-hmm. And then, like, they're like, yeah, we're going to listen to the classics. And it's something that's, like, made from, like, the year that movie was made. And you're just like, they're just like me, but it's in the future. Yeah. That's stupid.
Celebrities, they're just like us.
Lazy. But what I appreciate is, I just saw that movie Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets.
I apologize for your...
I liked it.
...for your state in life.
Luc Besson.
Yeah, I don't know who that is.
The Professional, Fifth Element.
Oh, okay.
With M. Nikita, Transporter.
Okay.
You see any of those?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he did this one. It's pretty good. Mm. No?
It's got that chick with the eyebrows, right?
Yeah. She does all right.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway, that's set in the future, and they do some, like... interesting covers of modern songs, but like with more of like futuristic instruments. And I always love bringing this one up, the newer Judge Dredd movie, Dredd.
Mm.
That had some quality electronica music that made you think of the future.
It's a really good movie.
I loved it. Okay.
And Carl Urban.
I always thought it was Keith Urban, yeah. But I found out recently that is a
country music singer from Australia.
But he doesn't sing Australian music, right?
No.
He doesn't sing his country's music.
No.
That's too bad.
No.
Didgeridoos.
He's
kangaroos.
He's married
everything
to,
rhymes down
Nicole
there.
Nicole Kidman, too.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yep. There
is that go. Is that a lateral move? She was married to Tom Cruise for a while.
I think it's a vertical move because Keith Urban's taller.
And possibly not insane?
Yeah. Younger. Like she
got a newer model.
Trade Tom Cruise in for a younger, taller model.
It's hard to do. Okay, so futuristic movies that have futuristic movie or music is good. Where do you land on movie? Like, did you see Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves?
Yeah.
With
Kevin Costner.
And who's the guy who throws the sword? Your boy. He's the voiceover for everything. Morgan Freeman.
Oh, okay. I was like, Mark Hamill?
How is Mark Hamill? What is he the voiceover
He's
of?
A voice actor, not a voiceover.
Oh, okay. Well, that's my bad. Yeah. But that movie's set in, like, post-Crusade times, as one of our movies is. And it plays it straight. Like, everything, it's like people are playing lyres, mm-hmm. you know, and then when there's dramatic music, there's just the score.
And then if you stay after the credits, you can watch the Bryan Adams music video.
What? Oh, no. Oh, well, I guess that...
You know it's true.
That's from that movie?
Yeah.
Wow, I missed that one. Yeah. I guess, was that just in the credits then?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
I was like, after, yeah.
Interesting.
One of my friends,
stay tuned.
One of my friends said, I used to fast forward all the way to the end just so I could watch that music video.
It's a good movie. Well, it's a really long movie, too, yeah. though.
It's good.
Yeah.
It's good. There was a lot of Robin Hood movies that came out at the time. It seemed like, and like, Men in Tights came out.
The cartoon one from Disney was in the 60s, I think.
That's my favorite Disney movie.
Ever?
Yeah.
That's a bold statement.
I love that
movie. I support that. It's a great movie.
And speaking of soundtracks, the soundtrack to
that one killed it.
It's very underrated. It's like, you don't hear about, like when you hear of like classic Disney soundtracks,
mm-hmm.
you don't really mention that one. So much good music on there.
I wonder why. That's interesting. Yeah, but so I think...
Racism against foxes, I think.
Yeah, that makes sense. That would be speciesism.
Yeah, Scottish foxes.
That'd be ethnic speciesism.
Yeah, it's ethno-speciesism. It's very,
like, it's got its own category.
It's a very niche part of bigotry.
It shows up in very few Venn diagrams.
Yeah, yep.
But anyway, so the soundtracks play an important role, and we tried to do research on this, guys. We hit the internet, we read some stuff.
For like 10 minutes.
Okay, that doesn't sound good when you say that. But yeah.
I mean, that's a lot for, you know, in today's ADHD society.
Also, for considering how much we make off of this podcast,
yeah.
It's a lot of work.
And the minimal amount of effort we put into it. This episode brought to you by Twizzlers.
It's always brought to us by Twizzlers.
Twizzler twist.
The strawberry kind.
That's their tagline.
what were we talking about? Give me a second. I'll come back.
Research.
Yeah. And there is not a lot to be said about these movies, except for the fact that they are they're known for their prominent use of anachronistic soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
However, both of them were sort of, I guess, like critically celebrated for their use of
mm-hmm.
what they used, even though they are pretty different uses of them. The two movies we're going to discuss is Marie Antoinette, which is a 2006 historical drama film written and directed by Sofia Coppola with Kirsten Dunst. How do we say it? Kirsten Dunst?
Yeah, Kirsten.
As the lead character, Marie Antoinette. Story follows her when she's 14. She gets betrothed to the soon-to-be... Well, I guess he's the... They kept saying Dauphin?
Yeah.
That's like the prince,
I guess, like,
or whatever?
Or like the king-in-waiting. Or...
Yeah, so he's the prince-to-be... Or he's the prince-king-to-be of France. He's one of the Louis.
He's your queen-to-be. You ever seen Coming to America?
Not that part of it.
That's great.
So he's about to be Louis the 16th. His father's ripped torn as Louis the 15th. And it follows the story of her sort of like figuring out how to navigate the social court. And her job is to like pop out kids and, you know, be rich.
A lot of pressure to pop out male children.
Yeah, heirs to the throne.
Yeah.
Especially once she becomes
yeah.
queen instead of just princess or dauphina, whatever that word was.
I think.
Yeah, thank you. Porpoise, of course.
Of corpus.
But we're going to talk a little bit more about the plot to this in just a moment, because our second movie was Lady Hawk, a 1985 American fantasy film directed by Richard Donner.
Which I didn't even know until after I watched it.
Starring Matthew Broderick of Ferris Bueller's Day Off fame.
Mm-hmm.
Rutger Hauer of somewhat... I think he's in The Expendables now. I think he's made it that high as an action hero.
The first movie I ever saw with Rutger Hauer, my dad made me watch Blind Fury.
I don't...
About this, like,
ring a bell.
Blind guy who does, like...
Karate.
Like,
oh,
bullshit.
That was a guess.
Like,
was it Daredevil?
He's kind of like Daredevil.
All right.
He likes ass.
Okay.
As a blind guy.
And Michelle Pfeiffer of Dangerous Minds fame.
Uh-huh. Catwoman herself.
Also, like, barely mentioned on the Wikipedia page or the IMDb page, Alfred Molina.
I didn't even know it was him.
Oh, I could tell in a heart. I forgot his name, but I'm like, oh, there's Doc Ock.
Yeah,
like,
I'm used to fat Alfred Molina.
Okay, yeah,
I'm
this
not
is
used to like pretty in shape.
It's
Alfred
like
Molina,
26 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but he's a wolf trapper named Cesar.
Was he the guy in Raiders of the Lost Ark who, like, at the right before the big, like, spoiler alert, the big ball rolling scene?
Harrison Ford.
He was the guy that did like the finger things, like right when I think he tried to screw Harrison Ford out of the idol at the beginning.
Okay.
Yeah, pretty sure that's Alfred Molina. But yeah, Dr. Octopus for
yeah.
sure.
But so Richard Donner, famous for The Goonies.
We call him Dick Donner.
Lethal Weapon series, the movie Scrooge, and this is counted as one of his commercial successes. Did you know that?
Let's not forget Superman.
They didn't even mention that, because I guess that's right down the middle. He also made the movie The Toy with Robin Williams. That is measured as one of his commercial flops.
Robin Williams. I don't even remember that movie. Was Richard Pryor in that one?
I don't know. The cover is, it's like a blue sky backdrop. Robin Williams, like, all in red with a weird hat.
Hmm.
Ring a bell?
That could be any. That could be Patch Adams. That could be.
No. Patch Adams is when he's like, oh, that's Jack.
See, it could be any of them.
He's like jumping and he's doing like a...
Yeah, he's like, I'm crazy.
In a movie.
Go see this movie.
This movie follows 13th century South... So Aquila is like the name of the town. Apparently exists in real life. Didn't know. I thought this was all make-believe. But apparently it's in southern Italy. But all the people's names seem to be French, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Philippe Gaston.
Right. I'm not even going to try this. Etienne? What was the guy's name?
Etienne,
Isabeau, and Cesar. We follow Matthew Broderick's, like, thief character who escapes, and it's, like, outrageous that he was able to escape this, like, super prison, but it looked pretty easy. Like, I mean, he did it in, like, I don't know, an hour, maybe? So anyway, he escapes, he gets tracked down, but then he gets saved from being taken back to prison by Rucker Hauer's character, Etienne, or Entenmann's.
Yeah. Delicious maker of delicious pastries.
Mostly like coffee cakes, but yeah. We find out that Rucker Hauer's character, so he can convince Matthew Broderick's character to lead him back into the city.
Yeah.
Because he's gotta kill the bishop. And the bishop's a bad, bad man.
Yeah.
And we find out eventually that this is like it takes a long time for this to come out in the movie.
Yeah.
But like they tell you it like immediately every time you read about it. So
That was the thing, like, when I was reading...
It's in the synopsis.
Yeah, I read the synopsis.
Of, like, when you're going to watch it on TV.
Yeah, it was, like, on the, like, on the screen.
But it takes a really long time in the movie to get there.
So I kind of knew going in.
It's called Lady Hawk.
Yeah, I kind of knew going in. They don't tell you too much, but they do tell you that there was a curse involved.
Right.
You don't get to any of that stuff until...
Right.
Until you're, like, pretty deep into the movie.
Yeah. So Michelle Pfeiffer's character has been cursed so that she will turn into a hawk by day, and then she's her human form by night, or by sundown. And then Rucker Hauer's character is a man by day and turns into a wolf by night.
And Rucker Hauer was like the leader of the King's Guard.
He was captain, right.
Captain of the Bishop's Guard.
But because
whatever.
Everyone is so madly in love with Michelle Pfeiffer's character... And there's some deception in there. The bishop sells, like, uses witchcraft.
Yeah, like black magic.
To curse the two lovers because she's in love with Rucker Hauer. And he is mad that she's not in love with him or some nonsense. So he got sent out.
It's basically the plot of Shrek.
It's not the plot of Shrek. Except for, you know, all the... finer details.
Yeah.
You mean Shrek 2?
I think it's the plot of Shrek. Like, the king was like...
Oh yeah, Shrek 2, they're already friends.
Spurned by
the beautiful lover.
Yeah.
Alright, so anyway...
He's also cursed.
And then, like, there's some other stuff in there, and adventures ensue.
So Rucker Hauer is a person by day, and a wolf by night.
Mm-hmm.
So, there's, like, they even mentioned that there's, like, a brief second... where, like, they're both transforming,
mm-hmm.
that they can almost touch.
Right.
But but they can't.
Right.
And apparently they don't remember anything that happened.
Because when they're in their beast state, they're like all instinct and not.
Yeah.
They're not controlling.
They still like protective of each other and things like that. Just but that, like you said, it's just very, it's instinctual and.
Right.
They don't remember anything that happens.
In the movie Marie Antoinette, there's a lot of actual songs like that are picked from the 80s and 90s. Mm-hmm. It says the soundtrack contains new wave and post-punk bands.
Ooh, new wave.
But it's new spelled correctly, not N-U, which is an important distinction sometimes. Some of the bands mentioned New Order, Gang of Four, The Cure, Susie and the Banshees, Bow Wow Wow, Adam and the Ants, The Strokes, Dustin O'Halloran, and The Radio Department.
And Bow Wow Wow, of course, is I want candy.
Bow, 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 bow.
Oh, that's where they get their name from. Bow, wow, wow.
There you go. And then it said some scenes utilized period music by Jean-Philippe Rameau, Antonio Vivaldi, Francois, not going to say that right. And it also had songs from electronic musicians Square Pusher and Aphex Twin.
I love Aphex Twin.
Oh, yeah? Name their first studio album that went platinum.
It was a self-titled album by the band.
What's Aphex the band's Twin. Name? Okay. Pretty good. I'm impressed. The music in Lady Hawk was pretty much just the score. There, uh-huh. there were no words with the lyrics. However, the film score was composed by Adam Powell. How do we know him?
Now, he is the lead singer of the Beatles.
The Beatles are mentioned in here. So it was composed by Adam Powell and produced by Alan Parsons.
Ooh, the Alan Parsons Project?
Famous for that. He's the headliner of that. And then there's also Gregorian chant music as well as traditional orchestral music. But it's got contemporary progressive rock-infused material. Alan Parsons, the arranger slash producer, was the engineer on Abbey Road, Dark Side of the Moon as well. Can you believe that?
I can't believe it, having heard some of his music.
So the progressive rock-infused material was also labeled pop synth.
Ah.
Which is...
I think we've talked about synth like, pop before.
Would that be, like, pop as in popular and then synth as in use of the synthesizer machine?
It's in pop is that they use those little champagne poppers like you use on New Year's.
That's fun. That is fun.
But they use different size ones for different keys and...
That sounds incredibly difficult.
It is. It's kind of like Bone Thugs and Harmony uses different gauge weapons to do the beats to their songs.
Okay. Well, I think you have to mention them because they're the provider of the bitcoins to this program.
Yeah, they're the glue.
The silent partner.
They're the glue that holds this podcast together. Bone Thugs and Harmony. Who's your favorite member of?
We have to say it on three.
Okay.
One, two. Three. Crazy Bone.
Wow! Nailed it.
It sounded like that was rehearsed, but Dan has done this game with me every time that now I've just learned what to say.
And then there's whenever
Flesh and Bone? Flesh and Bone?
Yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm. Whenever I play this game with my brother, he just ends up naming like the seven dwarves. He's like, Sleepy Bone!
Okay, so those are two movies with anachronistic soundtracks, and we gave you a little peek into what those soundtracks were. We're going to come back at you in just a moment with the criteria that we are going to use to decide which one of these movies is better. We're back. It's time for some criteria. Because we did movies, we're going to start with the one we always start with.
Which is rewatchability. Which movie would you want to watch a second time, or third, or fourth? Or if it's ever on TV, would you sit down and watch it? Or would you change the channel?
Or would you
like
tell...
a dick.
No. There's so much stuff to watch, though.
We haven't cussed enough, so
I've already watched it.
I gotta earn that E, that explicit rating.
Hey, well, you know, it's like a PG-13 movie. We can flick off the microphone all you want.
That's right.
But you drop one F-bomb... We're still okay.
You get one.
Yeah.
You get one.
So would you also recommend this to anybody? Mm-hmm. Would you say, hey, have you seen Lady Hawk? Or are you into Marie Antoinette's historical depiction? Because...
Mama Michelle Pfeiffer?
They're like, yeah. She's been in a lot... She's referenced a lot in songs recently, for whatever reason.
How old is Michelle Pfeiffer now?
I'm going to guess...
Wager a guess.
44.
Oh, God. She's got to be 60.
Oh. She was really young in this movie.
Yeah. This movie came out when?
85, so 32 years ago.
So how old do you think she was in this movie? 12?
I don't know. She seemed really skinny.
We'll have an intern look it up, but...
Our second criteria is, how much did the soundtrack enhance individual scenes? Because these scenes have high drama, they have some excitement, they have some poignancy. Did the soundtrack, did the songs, did the score, did they accentuate that, or did they just help it fall flat?
Michelle Pfeiffer is 59.
We were both right.
She'll be, we were both very close.
Over under rules, she'll I be, win.
Yeah, you're right.
Or Price is right rules, yeah.
She'll be 60 in April.
Of this year?
Yeah.
All right. So get all your fan mail into Michelle Pfeiffer right quick, everybody.
What, you think she's going to die?
She's about to be a sexagenarian. You know what that means.
You get sexy?
You're 60 years old.
Sexygenarian?
That's every age.
All right. Like a hot old lady?
They have names, Daniel.
Cougars. Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
That's one word for them.
I've seen Desperate Housewives.
I know you have. That's all you talk
that's
about.
That's all I ever talk about. I always weave it somehow.
Hey, you guys want to talk about Eva Longoria again? Like, no. You're like, I do.
I weaved it into the last show with Danny Elfman.
Yeah. that's just one of the weird rules of society. All right, number three.
How does the soundtrack and the music blend into the story / time period?
Because both of these take place several centuries behind us, so we don't really listen to that kind of music anymore. Mm-hmm. Both of them did have some actual time-appropriate music mm-hmm. that the characters listened to at court or yeah. in towns and whatnot. Uh-huh. I think it's important to point out that neither of these movies broke that rule. How in, I guess it was Robin Hood Men in Tights, where they like broke the fourth wall and like made jokes about like all sorts of nonsense, and then like isn't there a boombox in it?
Yeah.
Okay. And then like in Monty Python and the Holy Grail, where the like the one guy cut into him, like this guy reporting for a history show, and then he gets cut down and then his wife calls the police, and that's how the movie ends, spoilers. Yeah. But like those movies like sort of thumb their nose at the whole idea of sure. keeping chronology accurate, but these movies for the most part do every single thing intentionally to keep you within that time period, except for the music.
Right.
Which is sort of like an extra layer on for it sort of winks at the audience without the characters having to.
And there was one more example in Marie Antoinette that I noticed.
Okay.
Did you notice when she was trying on the shoes?
Oh, the Converse All-Stars?
There was Converse All-Stars in there. I thought that was so cool.
You would. you shill.
I am. I am a shill for shoes that do not support your ankles. You believe people used to, like, play sports in those?
Yeah, because it's like being barefoot, right?
It is. Yeah, it is. It's like you think. It's probably worse because if you're barefoot, you know you don't have any ankle support.
Yeah.
If Converse All-Stars trick you into thinking that you're not going to break your ankle if you run too hard or change direction too fast. Surprise!
Now you have a shin splint, stupid. All right, and our last criteria.
Converse All-Stars, sponsor of the podcast.
Run faster, jump higher. Those yep. PTF Flyers. It's from The Sandlot.
Yeah, also a good movie. Is that your recommendation?
No, the all those songs are 50s yeah. and 60s. So.
Yeah. And you know, a lot
great
of
great movie,
the,
though.
That you know, just kind of by accident that, you know, when we were doing research on this, trying to find movies that fit into this criteria, mm-hmm. All we kept finding is articles that said stuff like, you know, most movies use songs that are appropriate to the time period. For example, this movie in the 50s, this yeah. movie in the 60s. And then the article would end.
American Graffiti. Yeah.
Like, and it would thanks. Say, but other movies go the other way.
They're like, everybody was surprised that it wasn't what it was supposed to be. You're like, what?
Yeah.
Shut up.
So, I mean, that's a perfect example. Like, I love all the, you know, like the Sandlot soundtrack.
Yeah.
It's like good stuff.
Golden oldies.
Yeah.
Of yesteryear.
Exactly. Absolutely. But, you know, these two buck the convention.
Yeah, they're like, hey, you know what? No.
Yeah.
So, speaking of soundtracks, which soundtrack from the movie would stand alone in isolation, where you would be like, you know what? This is pretty good. I guess I'll order it on Tidal. Where do people listen to music?
They go to Blockbuster Music.
Oh, right next to the Red Box,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, they go to Blockbuster Music.
And Streetside Records.
Yeah.
Aw, pour one out for our fallen.
Yep.
That's sad.
What was the other one that used to be at the malls?
B Dalton.
No, that's the bookstore. That's what I kept thinking of. is B Dalton.
Streetside? Oh, no, I already said that.
There was another one. We'll have an intern look it up.
Okay. So those are our four criteria. Where do you want to start, Dan?
Top rewatchability.
Okay. Which one are you going to watch again, Dan?
This one was easy for me.
Okay.
It was Lady Hawk. Like, hands down.
Got a Hawk fan over here.
Because when I was watching it, I kept almost going and getting my wife.
Mm-hmm. My wife.
Taking my wife.
Still so bad.
My wife likes to talk after sex, so she calls me from a hotel room.
Oh!
I get no respect.
Oh, that's, yeah.
That's Andrew Dice Clay mixed with Rodney Dangerfield.
You're welcome. Anarchanisms.
But there was, I kept wanting to go get her and say, because I know she would like this movie, and I am going to watch it again with her.
Okay.
Because of, I guess, just like the fantasy element of it, and like Matthew Broderick was like charming as hell.
He pretty,
in this movie.
Did you see that at one point they tried to get Sean Penn for this role?
Yeah,
I'm just like,
that's like two totally opposite actors.
Also, like
he'd have been smoking a cigarette and
like not like making eye contact,
cussing people out.
Here's what I found somewhat. So I also picked Lady Hawk because Marie Antoinette's was too emotionally draining for me. Like, there was, like, serious drama and, like, concerns. Like, I cared about what was going to happen, and I didn't know why, because this these were incredibly rich, like, out-of-touch people, like, from the 1700s. So I didn't care. I didn't think I would care about what was happening to them, but it was, and then it was sad. And it was frustrating. So I wouldn't want to go through that again.
Yeah.
Where Lady Hawk is sort of like, it's fun. It's not Prince of Thieves good. It's not, you know, action-packed the whole time. The wizardry stuff's kind of silly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the action's okay. It's not the greatest, but I'd watch it again.
Yeah, I think I was surprised by both of them. Mm-hmm. And the fact that I really didn't know what to think about Lady Hawk, because I'd never even heard of the movie until we looked it up, much less that it was like a Richard Donner movie and that it had like big name actors in it, mm-hmm.
Like Rutger Hauer and Oliver Molina or Alfred Molina
and his brother Oliver
Molina. Platt. That's what I was gonna say.
I think. It was just, I was surprised by that because I really had no reference going into it. I would say I was more surprised by Marie Antoinette because I was going in expecting to be hate it.
So bad, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I was also...
I was going in expecting to just fucking hate this movie.
So I don't know if you read anything about either of these movies, but Lady Hawk, we almost watched the movie Legend, which does almost the exact same thing Lady Hawk does, where it has like a synth pop soundtrack, even though it's set in the medieval like fantasy times. And I had texted Dan, I said, do you want to watch a movie with Michelle Pfeiffer in it or Tom Cruise?
Easy.
And he says, it took him, like, there were not even dots. He just sent back Pfeiffer. Because he has that saved, so he could just hit control.
Control P. It just comes up Pfeiffer.
And apparently, Legend was atrocious.
Mm.
Like, all the fans that liked Lady Hawk hated Legend.
Okay. Because
they came out probably within 2 years of each other. Both fantasy films set in medieval times, both with synth pop. But apparently, Lady Hawk was the better of the two.
Mm-hmm.
So, that, thank goodness.
But and it's weird, because Legend is the one that I've I hadn't seen either one of them. But I've heard of Legend.
You've heard of the Legend a Bagger Vance. That's what
you're thinking. Teabagger Vance. That's the one I
He carries a bag. That's true.
Yep.
Yeah.
I've actually heard of Legend, like when you talk about geeky overrated movies from the 80s that, you know, people look back fondly
cult
on,
followings.
But they're like not very good.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard like Legend just because it was, I guess it was. Because
it was legendary.
An early Tom Cruise
vehicle.
I love it.
Yeah.
End of show. Because we're so professional. You just used vehicle
correctly, I might add.
In reference to movies.
Oh, but so what I was trying to say about Lady Hawk that I found somewhat frustrating was that it seemed like they had just watched Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and they're like, let's just have Matthew Broderick do the same thing, but instead of looking at the camera, he sort of looks to the left of the camera, and he keeps saying God. Like, he keeps having conversations with God. And I'm like, oh, that's...
I loved his little conversations with God.
Yeah, because Ferris Bueller was great.
It was, yeah. It is a very good movie. I thought he was just... I thought he was charming as hell in this movie. I thought he, like, totally made the movie as Philippe Gaston, a.k.a.
The Mouse.
The Mouse.
Because he's so mousy. Mm-hmm. All right, next one. Which soundtrack blended better into the time period and story? You want to go first?
You can go first on this one, because...
I thought
kinda up in the air about it.
I'm gonna go with Lady Hawk because it was in a fantasy world, so like having those like sweeping like synth, I don't know what those instruments are. It would get like
a lute. Is it called a lute?
I think it's a lute.
A lute.
An L-ute. No, but I thought the music did a better job of like going with the time period of like they're in the forest and it's sort of like majestic looking, and that, you know, they're going through fields and then those like the weird castles and like the tiny towns, and like the music sort of kept pace with that, and then like, you know, a horse chase through a field or whatever. Camera work and so with the scenery, and I thought that like it captured the time period well, and then the music sort of complemented that in a good way.
Yeah, it was close for me because I thought both, and they're both, you know, very good directors, Richard Donner and Sofia Coppola, who's really kind of gotten big in the last 5 to 8 years, I think.
I want to say she started, so her first movie was 2003, and that was sort of like small on purpose sort of thing, because she didn't want to ride the coattails of her father being Francis Ford Coppola, so she sort of like doesn't try to do blockbusters. And this movie actually like got terrible reviews because everybody's like, this isn't historically accurate, and she's like, yeah,
I think it even referenced one book, like
she
one
used
of the books that she read.
So that she would, like, get times right and ages right.
But she said one of the books, like, I guess there's a couple famous Marie Antoinette biographies. And
autobiographies.
And she said one of them...
written by a robot.
Yeah. One of them is very just bland and on, you know, her life and everything that happened. It's just very just facts and figures and things like that. And another one is more personable, you know, makes her more, you know, humanizes her more. And I think that's what she said, what she wanted to do with this. And then I get the other thing about, before I get back to our criteria here, which is the whole reason we're here.
Is it though? Who even knows anymore?
The thing about Kirsten Dunst being Marie Antoinette, I was kind of not sure at first because she never really came off to me as like a serious actress, I guess, from Bring It On and Spider-Man and things like that.
Crazy slash beautiful.
This was kind of when she was starting to, I think I call it like kind of like what Ben Affleck did when he got so
mature.
Big. Well, he got so big at one point of time that everybody just kind of tuned him out.
Wrote him off.
And then he kind of he took some time off for movies, and he came back with like some like lower budget movies like Hollywoodland, and then he like, you know, did like directing stuff and then he kind of like, you know, slowly worked his way back into where he's freaking Batman now.
And sometimes he's directing himself too.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, Whatever you think about it, like, they're good movies.
Yeah, and she kind of took some time off. She was actually in The Virgin Suicides.
Which is Sofia Coppola movie.
Sofia Coppola movie.
First one.
And she kind of came back with, like, some lower, I don't want to say lower budget, but, like, lower prominent roles, I guess, to kind of just,
which,
you know,
usually
test the
means,
waters to get back in.
Usually means those have more introspective writing, and for her, like, it gives her more room to actually act. Yeah. Instead of just like...
Standing in the rain, like, kissing Spider-Man.
We want you to be like an attractive blonde who's in high school. We want you to be an attractive blonde who's like attracted to Spider-Man. Yeah. And then she was also more, just a couple years ago, she was in second season of Fargo where she played like a housewife who was like kind of crazy. Yeah. And she did an awesome job.
That was the other thing that I couldn't remember that what she... Because she's been getting a lot of rave reviews like the last few years for her acting, which is good.
You would never think that.
Right, because of...
Because we wrote her off.
Right, exactly. And that's kind of what Affleck had to do when he came back. And, you know, now he's like a big, you know, director that people mm-hmm. want. And, you know, already had like an Oscar for writing.
Yeah.
But as far as... This one was kind of hard for me, blending with... the time period, because I thought they both did a good job of that. I didn't think that anything seemed forced
or out of place.
And I always go back to Suicide Squad.
Okay.
Where they tried to just put like classic rock songs in to...
Everybody has an at-bat song.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And it just to make it cool, because that worked in Guardians of the Galaxy so well. And they said, well, we got to do it too, and it's going to be awesome. We're going to do three times as many classic rock songs.
Because usually more equals better.
Yep, always. Always.
Money, drugs,
pancakes.
Penicillin.
Penicillin.
You need more. It's better.
Yeah, I guess so. But I'll go with Lady Hawk as well, just because I guess I didn't... When the scenes were happening and the soundtrack was happening with the scenes... I wasn't as, I don't want to say drawn to the song, but the song didn't distract me mm-hmm. from the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
The song, I think, added to the scenes. Well, that's a different category. But.
Let's go to that right now. So, we'll skip soundtrack in isolation, save that for last. But which soundtrack that was anachronistic, did not belong in that time period, did a better job of enhancing the scenes?
Okay, so I guess I said that last one wrong because...
Oh, my God.
It was, for Lady Hawk, it was less distracting.
Okay.
And I think that's, so it blended well.
Right.
I think for enhancing the scene, I'm going to go with Marie Antoinette.
I'm 100% behind you. I completely agree.
Because, like, the I Want Candy scene.
And it's playing during, like, this whole, like, decadence.
Yeah.
Like she's gambling.
Like a montage of...
They're showing all the like macaroons and like delicious like treats she's
like
getting.
10 dogs running around.
And she's like trying on all these expensive cloths.
Converse All Stars.
Yeah. So expensive cloths. Did I say clothes wrong? Anyway. Well,
Converse All Stars are made out of cloth. That's why they give you no ankle support.
It's like those Tom shoes that's basically a bag.
Oh, that's my brother's. That's my hipster brother. He's a tree hugger that won't go outside.
It's warm outside sometimes.
He likes to hug really, inside trees.
Really cold inside too.
He's always rocking Toms. He goes, man, my Toms got trashed at the music festival. It's like, that's like the most hipster sentence I've ever heard.
Okay, so I thought that Lady Hawk synth pop, like, I enjoyed it at times, but it did not manage to grab my attention.
Yeah.
The way that, like, when there's a fight scene or there was, like, I guess, like, the weird mysticalness that is, like, hey, where's this strange woman come from
mm-hmm.
who's, like, she knows how to deal with this like super fierce wolf. It's just like, I didn't think they did a good job with that. Where, and this sort of goes to how like the directing style as well, and like they attribute a lot of this to like the director of photography, like how the scenes like look instead of just what's happening in them. But like Marie Antoinette had a lot of like vistas, like sunset, or like they're like lying in tall grass, or there was like fireworks going on, or there'd be like a slow motion like scene with like them playing around or like doing something silly mm-hmm. and then they would have music to go along with it, and then it was like her in a backdrop or like the backdrop, like sort of went with her clothes, and it's just her staring off into space as you hear her mother's words through a letter, and it's like something really sad, and then sad music would play. And like, I thought they did a really good job of like it being obvious that it didn't belong mm-hmm. in that time period, but like, oh, this person back then felt the same thing that you could feel when you listen to this music.
Yeah, there was another example, the Fool's Rush In
mm-hmm.
song.
Yeah.
I thought that scene blended real well with...
By Elvis, of course. Only Fool's Rush In.
It was... I liked that scene, not to give away, you know, too much about the scene, but I thought it, you know, really kind of showed the... And like, the lyrics to the song really kind of... Mm-hmm. Summed up what she was feeling at that time, because she did rush in.
Yeah.
She got married at 14.
She was betrothed at, I think, yeah, sent
and
off.
Pregnant at 16.
Yeah.
And
queen
at 19.
Of a country.
Yeah. A freaking country.
Yeah.
And I thought that blended really well, or that enhanced the scene rather than versus blending.
Right.
So I thought for blending, Lady Hawk,
right.
for kind of taking a risk and putting something out there that was non-traditional to enhance the scene, Marie Antoinette.
Because I think blending, it serves a purpose if what's happening is, like, can stand alone. Mm-hmm. And I thought that, like, because Lady Hawk is an action fantasy love story,
mm-hmm.
that it shouldn't be too much about, like, this crazy soundtrack where, like, even though the story of Marie Antoinette is, like, historically important, like, the story itself is pretty interesting, it's also supposed to, the soundtrack was supposed to make you feel stuff instead of just being like, mm-hmm. hey, this is happening. It's like, we're going to use this to enhance it,
mm-hmm.
amplify it. Okay, then our last one, Soundtrack in Isolation. Which would you... So both of these soundtracks were critically accoladed, I guess, or claimed. That's the word people use. Because they were so different. And, like, 1985, synth pop's all the rage.
Mm-hmm.
2006, like, this is sort of... I guess it sort of saw, like, the use of 80s music... like, coming back in and, like, specific post-punk 90s music, sort of, like,
mm-hmm.
all it handpicked good stuff for this. And when we were doing our research, they talked, they're saying good stuff about both of them.
Mm-hmm.
So which one would you want to listen to on your own?
I don't know if either one really kind of jumps out as...
Like listenable?
Like a soundtrack I'd, like, want to go out and buy.
Mm-hmm.
I think both of them have their merits in the fact that the Marie Antoinette album has some songs on there that actually have lyrics,
mm-hmm.
which normally lends to listenability. However,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to go with Lady Hawk.
Okay.
Because from the very first scene, the opening credits to Lady Hawk, and it kind of comes in like almost like a Rocky movie.
It reminded me, like, synth-pop.
Or Karate Kid or
synth-pop
like
reminds
that.
Me a lot of, like, Super Nintendo video mm-hmm. games, like, of that. And that's one of my favorite things that a handful of songs will do now, where they'll, like, have, like, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do, mm-hmm. like, come in. I don't know what it is, but I just... maybe it's because we're of this generation.
Yeah, it could be.
And people like figured it out by the time it made it to movies and soundtracks and stuff, but I enjoy that stuff. I also picked Lady Hawk because even though Marie Antoinette is definitely the superior film, like, from movie standpoints of, like critical acclaim and all that, like, Roger Ebert definitely thought so. Subject matter is probably more important and the acting was better. I just didn't like the music. Like, I thought it did a good job as a soundtrack. All of these acts that I like read off, I only know The Cure and I apparently Bow Wow Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like that song.
Yeah.
And I know The Strokes too. But like, I wasn't a huge fan of that music. And I also want to notice, this is, or point out rather, that Dan and I have not sang this episode. And that happens all the time.
Yeah.
We didn't sing a single one of these songs, Dan.
We're just going to sing the entire soundtrack at the end. So yeah. Stay tuned.
It's going to be a... I'm going to do mostly synth pop noises with my own mouth. It's like beatboxing,
yeah,
but synth,
like
synth boxing. Oh, is, yeah. Exactly like that. But I thought that was... So that's the only reason I wouldn't recommend, or I didn't pick Marie Antoinette's soundtrack, because it's probably... I also like music with words in it, but the synth pop, you could just put it on the background when you're like, you know, reading or something, or you're having a casual dinner party, mm-hmm. and you're like, hey, check this shit out.
Yeah, I thought that, I guess I just thought for Lady Hawk, it was just more enjoyable
mm-hmm.
to listen to overall.
And that could be because, like, they kept talking about how Marie Antoinette, Sofia Coppola wanted to point out that even though she was, like, this person of excess in history, and like we remember her for like her famous line that let them eat cake, which was not like, oh, they can eat desserts. Like, cake is when you cut up a piece of bread, all of like the leftover parts, like the scraps of the bread, that's called cake.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they're like, they're, you know, we don't have enough bread for the poor people, she's like, well, they can eat the scraps that we're eating.
Mm-hmm.
And so that didn't go over well with the masses. And so a lot of people were critical of her treatment of, like, the sympathetic view that she used. I read this in a lot of the reviews. They're like, that they were frustrated with that. And she's like, I wasn't trying to do, like, a period piece. I'm just trying to show that, like, this is, like, a universal thing that happens to people. It's like... She just sort of got tossed around. Really, the only thing she was being used as to establish peace between these two nations, mm-hmm. and then she was used to produce children, and then she was just put off on a farm.
Yeah, she was she was a tool. She was a means to an end.
But everybody wanted to use her for something,
uh-huh.
and then she didn't really get a say in that. So, but I liked the movie, but I can't recommend it for this
mm-hmm.
because it looks like Lady Hawk is the better movie with... anachronistic soundtrack.
Sure. You have not talked about your boy
Rutger Hauer,
Jason Schwartzman yet.
Yeah,
you're a big Schwartzman fan.
He always annoys me, but he's so funny.
He annoys the hell out of me.
He's so funny
in everything he's in.
Have you seen everything he's in?
I've no.
But you've seen two movies with him in it.
I don't think he's funny.
Have you? Okay.
I think he. Like, tries, like, super hard to be, like...
So, strap like yourselves funny. In, audience. You're getting an extra recommendation.
Great.
If you're not a Jason Schwartzman fan, but you want to be, like Dan here, you want to be a convert, you should watch The Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Every Wes Anderson movie
ever. A claymation Wes Anderson movie. So, first of all, it's claymation, which is great. Second of all, it's by Roald Dahl, who's legit.
Yeah.
Okay. Third, it's a Wes Anderson movie for everybody.
No.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
It's a perfect segue. It's a perfect entrance gateway drug for Wes Anderson films. That's the right phrase, right?
Yeah. I don't know. Do we have historical evidence that that's how his character really acted?
I mean, they didn't have a baby for a long time, so. And the doctor said he was okay.
But he kind of acted like he had, like he was, like, on the spectrum somewhere.
Aren't we all?
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Charter.
Yeah.
Get
I
it?
Think so.
Charter Spectrum.
Yeah, I got you. I understood.
Friends of the show.
Yeah, sponsors.
Oh, no, they won't give me any money.
No. Like, please stop mentioning our services on your shitty podcast. I assumed that you loved everything that he did in this movie.
I mean, he was frustrating as a character to watch because
he's frustrating as an actor to
Oh,
watch.
My gosh. Whatever.
I just don't get it. I don't get it.
That's
I don't understand it.
Fifth category.
Schwartzman.
I thought he did a better job acting than Rutger Hauer did.
Oh, come on. Rutger Hauer's good.
He didn't know what the movie was about. He just kept throwing his sword. That's all he did the whole movie.
That's not how you use a sword, dummy.
Wee, 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 wee. And he threw it like a spear.
Yeah.
Twice.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really long sword. Anyway, I'm getting away from myself. Dan and I have both decided that Lady Hawk is your choice for a film with an anachronistic soundtrack. Mm-hmm. We'll come back in just a minute with our recommendations. This is we're back with our recommendations for movies with anachronistic soundtracks that do not go with the time period that the movie is set in.
Comparing apples to oranges, brought to you by Charter Spectrum.
It's more expensive than they let on.
When you need unreliable internet,
you should probably call us.
At a high price, call Charter Spectrum.
Also, do you know what bundles are? Because you will, because they'll call you twice a week, every week, till you're dead.
Really don't need a landline phone?
Of course you don't. You live in goddamn 2018.
Call Charter. We'll bundle your ass up.
How are you going to call them? Oh, on a phone that's not a landline.
Hippies.
All right, so anyway, Dan, you want to start or you want me to start?
You can go.
All right, my movie recommendation is Django Unchained. Ooh. By Quentin Tarantino. Mm-hmm. This movie has prominent songs for the movie that were designed specifically for it. It is a soundtrack that I do own, and I think it's really cool to listen to. It also does something that we hadn't mentioned for certain soundtracks, where they'll have like sound bites from the movie. We mentioned that this popped up on the Desperate Housewives soundtrack, where they had like one or two characters like do a little dialogue or a snippet where they would talk and it would remind you of the actual show. This had like some skits, sort of, that's what they call them in the game. But yeah, I thought it did an awesome job.
In the biz.
It has a lot of spaghetti western music, which is not necessarily anachronistic, but like it also goes along with the genre really well. But then it had music from like John Legend. It had a song by the RZA. And my favorite song that I thought went really well with the movie, because it goes on in like a slow motion scene, is a song that Jamie Foxx helped write and Rick Ross performs on the album called 100 Black Coffins. And it's, I think it just does a great job of being like stylistically strong, and the scenes are definitely enhanced by, like, because a lot of the movie takes place them roaming the, going through town to town and like collecting bounties and whatnot. But then when there's like high action scenes, they'll have exciting, like the score will go up, or there'll be like strong electric guitar, like all this awesome stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Also, movie's great, soundtrack's great, you know, in isolation, but together I think they really do a good job of complementing each other. Dan, what's your crazy recommendation?
Mine was actually
so crazy.
It's so crazy. It's the film that my wife and I love.
It inspired it all.
That inspired this whole shitty podcast. Well, not this whole shitty podcast, the whole shitty episode.
Thank you.
Because anytime that I join you, it's just a shit show.
Yeah.
I listen to some of your other ones, and it's just like, oh, those guys sound like really good together.
They're all right.
And then me and Mike was just, it's just, just DJ sounds and taking shots at Charter and stuff like that.
Okay, they know what they did.
Yeah, they know what they did. They deserve it.
At you, Terrence Charter.
Like you always say whenever we go out to eat about a waitress. She's the worst and she knows it.
It's just that one waitress. She knows who she is.
She's the worst. She knows it.
She knows who she is.
My recommendation is A Knight's Tale.
Okay.
Starring, rest in peace, Heath Ledger.
Mm-hmm.
I
can't remember a single other person in that movie.
Paul Bettany's in it.
He plays Geoffrey Chaucer,
yes,
the author of A Knight's Tale from the Canterbury Tales.
I forget what the female's...
I just know her name is Rosalind?
The lead female in there, she got kind of big for a little while because of this movie, but her career never really took off. I know that, like, the main antagonist in the movie, I saw him the other day. I was watching The Man in the High Castle.
Oh, yeah. Amazon original.
Yeah. And he's one of the, like, higher-up Nazi soldier.
Rufus Sewell.
Yeah. Yeah.
Count Adhemar. And then, oh, it's Jocelyn, not Rosalind.
Okay.
Shannon Sossaman.
Yes. Very pretty girl. But didn't really do much after made a couple movies.
Oh yeah, she was in 40 Days and 40 Nights.
Yeah,
that's a dumb movie.
Yeah, they tried. They tried to make it happen, but
she is not hitting a lot of. Oh, the second Hitman movie.
But
yikes, Stan.
I really enjoyed A Knight's Tale when it first came out, and I still think that it holds up pretty well. But that was the one that really kind of caught our attention when with classic rock soundtrack,
yeah.
Because I'm just looking at the soundtrack now, and first of all, I would just want to listen to the soundtrack, like,
which I think that's an important thing to point out too.
You know,
when they do it successfully, it's right. Something that you it's good enough standalone.
It's got Queen. It's got Lowrider by War. Taking Care of Business, Bachman Turner Overdrive. I've been taking care of business every day. Taking care of business every way. I've been taking care of business. It's all mine. Taking care of business and working overtime. Got David Bowie.
I also want to point out that I think a lot of, like, Django Unchained had some modern music that made it cool, mm-hmm. And then so Knight's Tale, it said, came out in 2001. Most of this music is like that retro nostalgia music too. Not that like they're oldies, but it's like old enough.
Yeah,
where it has
that's kind of what Guardians
staying power.
That's like what Guardians of the Galaxy did. Is
yes.
That by the time that movie came out, those songs from the late 70s, early 80s were not considered like when I think of oldies, I think of like 50s and 60s.
Yeah,
but as we're getting older, you know,
we are
oldies become, you know, 60s and 70s and
right.
Things like that.
Like Billy Joel is now in the oldies
section. Absolutely.
Because it's been over 30 years.
It has. Eric Clapton's on here. Sly and the Family Stone.
I just want to point out too, like when a movie, regardless if it's anachronistic or not, uses like a pop song from the radio, it sort of instantly dates itself.
Mm-hmm.
Like I just watched a movie that used that song, What's Wrong with Being Confident, that was super popular.
Ooh,
for like
Demi Lovato.
2 months on the radio, and now it's just like, I kind of forgot about it. And then I saw it in the movie, I'm like, when did this come out? And I looked it up, I'm like, oh, yep, that's about right. Like, it had already, but I think if the person picking the songs, would you think that'd be the director, like the sound designer?
I think it depends on who the
composer sometimes.
Director is. You know, if it's Quentin Tarantino,
he's got his thumb in all those pies.
Yeah, he's doing all the soundtrack.
Yeah.
Like, he's in every single track, and he's probably putting in, like, the, you know, the dialogue stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it probably just depends on, you know, what kind of production you have. You know, if it's, like, a big-budget movie, then I'm sure there's a lot of, like, producers and stockholders and things like that that have input on the soundtrack. And the director sometimes is kind of just, like, there, you know, to make sure you get through the day.
Well, also, like, you have to, if you're getting like major songs, you also have to have some bankroll behind you to be able to get the rights to them to play in your movie.
Right.
Oh, so it turns out the writer of A Knight's Tale also did Man on Fire and LA Confidential. Wow. And a movie called Legend. That's fun. not the movie that we're talking about.
Yep.
And also a Robin Hood movie, Dan. This is outrageous.
I'm telling you, it's a good movie. Now, you weren't that big on A Knight's Tale, right?
Correct. Okay. I had seen it in high school and then had not seen it since, but I don't remember being wowed in high school.
Oh, man, I love
thought it. Was
I love it.
Over the top, but not in the way that I would want to rewatch it.
Yeah.
So maybe it's worth a try. Cause
somebody called it Rocky on horseback.
Well, that's wrong.
So it's a boxing movie on horseback.
Okay, it's Raging Bull, but with horses. You're like, well, not really. I think I'll give it another go, because the only thing I remember is the Queen song.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember being, like, not super impressed with it.
We Will Rock You is probably not
the best Queen song of all time.
No?
It's so contemplative of, you know, our situation.
It is. It's like...
is that or Fat Bottom Girls? Which one are you picking?
Oh, Fat Bottom Girls all the day.
No, that's a no-brainer.
Love that fucking song. I mean, that's, you know, I could see how that could kind of put you off a little bit, because, I mean, that's kind of like the most well-known Queen song, but Probably not even in their 10 best songs.
To Jabronis, maybe.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, I heard the song at that indoor football game I went to. You're like, yeah, you did.
Yeah, you were an investor in the Professional Indoor Football League.
XFL?
Yeah, so I'm big on A Knight's Tale. I love that movie.
Okay, so maybe it's worth a look.
Can I do an honorable mention recommendation?
All right.
How about Moulin Rouge?
How about no? Knock over the mic. So that's actually like the most, I think that's the most prominent movie.
Yeah, my wife just watched that the other day. Sat down and watched the most prominent
movie where the soundtrack, but that, in that movie, like the characters know that they sing the music, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's a mix of like stuff from the Sound of Music soundtrack and like Madonna and
Pussycat Dolls.
Yeah. It's just so much mix of, range of songs that none of them fit in the time period, but they all, I guess just the way they're presented and just in the storyline and by the various characters. As my wife is joining the show here, she heard us talking about Moulin Rouge and A Knight's Tale, and she's like,
Baz Luhrmann, let's go!
Decided to crawl out of
hibernation.
She like immediately woke up like Sleeping Beauty.
No, I've been in there listening to you guys the whole time.
And
listening pretty much everything.
And doing
with
great.
With a snarl
doing
on our
so
face.
Good. So why did you suggest A Knight's Tale as something worth talking about?
Actually, that's what I wanted to come in and correct.
Okay.
It was because I watched Moulin Rouge.
The other night.
And I was... But A Knight's Tale is a better example.
Oh, okay.
So I used that when I was pitching it to you guys. But, it was... I don't know, it's just something struck me about using the music that wasn't from the time period. And then, like, Moulin Rouge and A Knight's Tale, it's so much so that they, like, interact with the music, like you're saying. And this one, they actually sing the songs. In A Knight's Tale, they dance to the songs.
David Bowie?
Golden Year.
Here we go. You thought you weren't going to have it. You're wrong.
Hear you say like.
When they're doing We Will Rock You, the crowd is like chanting it and clapping.
They're stomping their feet.
They're interacting. That's what I was trying to get to, that broken barrier there where they're interacting with the modern music in the wrong time period.
Yeah.
But
and
there aren't a lot of
movies does a better
like
job.
That.
No, they cited Back to the Future as that because Marty McFly plays Johnny B. Goode. And I'm like, what? No, like.
No.
Chuck!
Count.
It's your cousin!
Marvin Berry! You gotta hear that. And then, so that just turns out that Chuck Berry, rest in peace, is just a thief.
He's
a thief.
He's...
But he stole from himself?
Yeah.
This is the part in Looper when he's just like, shut up, no one cares about the science.
Yeah, it's really weird because most white rock and rollers stole a lot of the songs from African-American singers.
But, so he's just getting them back.
But this director has decided to. Who directed that?
I think it's. I don't know.
Robert Zemeckis. I think.
Okay.
Bob Zemeckis. We call him. Yes. Yeah.
Bobby
Zemeckis. I think he. I think he's insinuating that it went the other way around.
I think that's
which is kind of racist on his part.
Yeah, it's just he's like, this is the story that history doesn't want to remember. Yep. He's like, that's because it didn't happen.
Yep. And that's why Hollywood is broken.
Let's travel through time.
And then Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah.
Can't keep it in his pants.
Let's hope 2018 has fewer sad hashtags, guys.
Yeah. So, which one do you...
Do you have a recommendation besides those two?
I don't know of any other ones.
Yeah.
Which one do you... would you want to watch, like, right now?
A Knight's Tale.
Knight's Tale.
Okay.
Convince Mike to watch it, because he only watched it once.
I just said I would.
And he said he didn't like it.
I regretted my decision to watch Moulin Rouge.
Oh, no!
The other night. Like,
you're not Ewan McGregor fan?
Well, kind of like you were saying... Because I listened to the whole podcast.
Me too.
About the one movie being too serious and emotional ride.
Right.
And just, well, by the time you get to the end of that one, spoilers, not a happy ending.
Yeah.
You're like, why did I watch this? What's the point of life?
Right.
I don't, I am sad now.
Yeah.
It wasn't.
Instead of just some like fun romp.
Yeah.
Little Heath boy riding a horse.
I'd buy a big house.
Yeah. All right. Sounds good. Thanks, Dan.
We both could live.
All right, Dan.
You like how I did the underlying music to
her.
Oh,
is that what that was?
To her commentary.
It sounded like she was talking a normal level and you were singing just a little bit under her.
Yeah.
All right, so we've decided that Lady Hawk from 1985's our choice for movie with an anachronistic soundtrack is the best, but we also gave you two recommendations and an honorary mention.
Yeah,
so
you're welcome.
More bang for your Bitcoin buck. Yep. All right. Dan, do you have any plugs for other podcasts? Because I keep forgetting to ask you, and I know you do.
As a matter of fact, this young lady sitting right here and I have a podcast that's catching on pretty good.
It's a fan cast.
It's
important to designate those.
Well,
delineate.
I don't know what that means.
It's a podcast from fans.
Okay. Jessica and I are currently in the midst of a Harry Potter podcast.
Like in the mix. How do you not know all this vernacular? It's embarrassing.
It's called Broomsticks and Butterbeer. It is available on iTunes and on Google Play because we're hashtag blessed.
And what is it?
Broomsticks.
No, what?
And Butterbeer.
Okay.
Jessica, to explain what we do on Broomsticks and Butterbeer.
We're reading the Harry Potter series.
Chapter by chapter.
Chapter by chapter, starting with the first book. And each chapter we do a podcast and discuss it. I have read the Harry Potter books several times. I would consider myself a huge fan.
Mm-hmm.
And Dan has never read them. Mm-hmm. So this is his first time.
It's like sort of like Helen Keller, where he's like just learning to read, and we're all like super excited.
And I'm like, water!
No, you want to be like
water!
That. And then you're going to become a communist, just like she did when she learned how to read.
Wow. Communist Manifesto?
No, like she was huge pinko. Like it was a problem where like we don't remember that in history because she was so like into the Communist Party in America.
She was such an inspiring story.
That we have
that
to forget the
went
part.
Went terribly wrong.
Well, she's just like, now that I know how to read and write, we should talk about, like, labor laws. And they're like, nope.
Nah.
Can't hear you.
Hilarious. And then I also do the Rhino Wrestling Review, for those of you four people that listen to this podcast that also like pro wrestling. And Mike appears on the podcast every once in a blue moon.
Yeah. We just did one.
Mike the Wrestling Philistine.
We just did one, like a listening, mm-hmm. a live listening,
yeah.
Dubbing of Royal Rumble
1989,
the second Royal Rumble. So if you have 2.5 hours and absolutely no interest in like valuing your time, check it out.
Yep. Kind of like this podcast.
Yeah, so. This is a little bit shorter than 2.5 hours.
Yep.
Unless you listen to it twice. I recommend it. All right. Well, this has been Comparing Apples to Oranges.
I'm Dan.
Jess.
And this is Mike. Bye.
Bye.
I need 100 black covers for 100 bad men, 100 black grapes so I can lay they ass in. I need 100 black preachers with a black sermon to tell from 100 black Bibles. Why we send them all to hell, I need 100 black covers. Black covers. Black covers. Black covers.
That's a great song. Hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Thanks for listening to episode 23 of the podcast. Look us up on Tumblr. We are Comparing Apples to Oranges, all one word, .tumblr.com. That's where you'll find links for my co-host shows. Info about past episodes will also be up there. If you have some comments or ideas for future episodes of the podcast, send it to, on the Twitter, it's at the Cato Podcast, all one word. Or you can email us at catopodcast@gmail.com. If you like the intro, outro, and music bag music that was Thumbs Up by a great artist named Leisure B, check him out on humanworkshop.com. Hope you're off to a great February, and we will catch you next month. Bye.